Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, the host of Religion Means Alive. We have a very fascinating, phenomenal guest with us today, as always here on Religion Means Alive. And you can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. One of the issues we're going to discuss today is why black women are not dating black men. That's a very interesting question. But before we get into that, I want to welcome the honorable and noble Qadira Aisha Muhammad to the program. And she's in a humus, has a humus business. And since it's Ramadan Mubarak, and we got about an hour and a half on the East Coast before we can eat. But I'd love to have me some humus right now, actually, with red peppers. Sister Humus, welcome to Religion Means Alive, and give us an opening statement, if you will.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Qadira Aisha Muhammad, and my business is called Hearty Hummus. I started the hummus business probably like a year ago. I actually like went live, but normally what I would do is just make it for friends and family. Two of my closest friends and one of my family members suggested, like, hey, your hummus is so good. Why don't you expand it as far as selling it? So I did that, and I'm in a year so far, and it's been a whirlwind. It took off more than what I expected it to. And I don't make your traditional hummus. I do over 21 flavors. I have Old Bay crab, I have Philly cheesesteak, pepperoni parmesan, and a couple of other very unique flavors. So that's about it with the hummus business. Right now I'm doing it from my home. You know, it's just like a hobby, and I'm looking
to... Well, you know, dear sister, all businesses start from the home, basically. We pray, turn our direction to the Qibla, and there's the house. And to me, there's a message that everything, whether it be education, we start at home, business start at home, culture start at home. So the house is an orientation. So I think this is a great thing that you start your business. Let me ask you this. What is your academic and educational background?
I hold 3 degrees. 2 are in business management. One is in international business, and I also hold a degree in social work, mental health social services.
Okay. Well, that segues right into, let's talk a little bit more about the hummus business, because we're going to get from the hummus to the human business. You have a lot to talk about. And on Memorial Day, you had an emergency, you couldn't come, and I was all excited to have you on the program. But today... We're excited a few days after 4th of July that we have Sister Qadira. And I tell you something, it seems that you are conspiring with others to make me hungry. I love hummus. Since I shouldn't eat sweets, only thing I'm going to do is I'm going to bribe you, stay on the air, that you one day, when I come to Philly, I can get 5 flavors of hummus. Tell us what hummus is.
Hummus is garbanzo beans, or the more familiar name of chickpeas. And hummus is, you take the garbanzo beans and tahini, which is ground sesame seeds. You add garlic, you add a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper, fresh lemon juice, and any other flavors or spices that you want to add into it, and basically food process that down into like a paste or a dip. And that's basically hummus in a nutshell, the basic flavor. But I take that 10 times higher on my end.
Tell us about that. How do you take it 10 times higher?
You know, like I know within the African-American community, we're kind of skittish on trying new things. And so
yes.
I said, okay, me being African-American, you know, I said, what could I make to make, you know, that's healthy for, you know, the black community instead of eating chips and cookies and all the other things. But also I want it to be unique in the market. There's no one else I know of personally that makes hummus in these particular flavors that I do. So right now I have a monopoly in my niche. So what I do is I take different flavors that are familiar with the African-American community. Like I do black eyed pea, I do a 13 bean, I do a Philly cheesesteak, I do Parmesan pepperoni, I do Old Bay crab, I do a seafood medley, which is real lobster, real shrimp, real crab meat. And, you know, people ask me all the time, how can you put all those flavors in hummus? Like, I never heard of that before. And basically, the chickpea or garbanzo bean doesn't have a flavor. So whatever you add to it, it will absorb that flavor and take on whatever you added to it.
What about red peppers?
I do a roasted red pepper. I do
wow.
a roasted red pepper.
Oh, you're hitting on my... How would one eat this hummus?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question? I couldn't hear you.
How would one eat hummus? How do you eat hummus? I mean, I know how to eat it, though. Many of the people in our audience don't know how to eat hummus.
True. Basically, what you could do, you could get pita bread, you could get your Ritz crackers, you could get, I know a lot of people like the gourmet crackers, you could get different kinds of bread. A lot of people like, especially my children, they like pretzel rods to dip it in. So that's another thing. Toll House and Keebler crackers, however you want to eat it. One thing that I was trying to explore and go further with is putting it on sandwiches. Instead of having your lunch meat, which is high in sodium, high in cholesterol, it's a processed food, put on the hoagie roll or the bread, whatever you're going to eat, as you would like a tuna salad or a chicken salad. And then add your lettuce and tomatoes or whatever, because you can make it to that thick consistency. You know, like when I make my hummus, I just don't do it like in a regular dip. I can customize it if you want it a little bit chunky, if you want it a little bit smooth, if you want it in between. So there are options for it.
And you actually have crab meat and lobsters in it?
Absolutely.
Wow.
And if people want to check that out,
you got an hour and a half. I wish you were like Amazon. Ship it up to me by drones. I would be eating it, really. Yeah. Are you planning to take this nationwide? I mean, I think it's a very unique story. Muslim African American producing hummus.
You know, I'm trying to break into the market. It's a little bit rough, you know, being a small business owner and then trying to break out on the market, because you have the big name brands like Sabra and, you know, a few others. But the thing about it is how I want my hummus to stay and remain is I always want it made from scratch. I don't want it in a big factory being pushed through machines into containers. I want that hands-on feel of when you walk into, inshallah, in the future, walk into my store or any location that I may have and order your hummus fresh. So it's not, I never use, another thing is I never use canned chickpeas. I always use fresh chickpeas and I pressure cook them. So you're getting very fresh product. You're getting a very fresh product. I don't add additives and preservatives and things of that nature, which is also unhealthy for you. So I don't keep hummus on hand. So if you call and want to place an order, you call and place the order, and I make it for you, and I usually ask for 24 hours for the simple fact that I want the flavors to set in and congeal into the hummus so that you get the full flavor of the hummus.
Now, could you put black eyed peas? A lot of African Americans like black eyed peas. I happen to be one that doesn't. Could you put black eyed peas in this hummus?
Absolutely, and I do make a black eyed pea hummus. And I add into it smoked turkey butts. Like I can cut up the pieces of the smoked
turkey
butts.
Oh, sister, I'm telling you. I don't know how long I can go on with this interview.
I have to make it for the people. I'm going to switch over to another subject.
Tell us, how did you become Qadira Aisha Muhammad? Where did you grow up? The factors in making you who you are? Just share a lot of personal information about you. We know your education.
Sure. Sure, not a problem. My original birth name is Tiffany Majay. A lot of people know me by that name. But within the Muslim community, I am Qadira Aisha Muhammad. I took my Shahada when I was 16 on June 9th. So I've been Muslim for 23 years. Basically, you know, I grew up in a two-parent home. I had my mother and father. My father passed away a little over 2.5 years ago. But I came from a strict upbringing. You know, I was involved in the churches when I was growing up. Very strict background. Like, you know, my parents didn't play any, you know, cutting up and fooling out and partying and things of that nature. But I think that is what really grounded me as far as, you know, seeing my parents, you know, make ends meet for both of us, for all me and my brothers growing up. You know, both parents worked, so we had it pretty good. There was a time when we struggled, but, you know, we made it through those times. And, you know, like my dad really was my cheerleader because he would always make smart remarks and things of that nature to, like, I want to say, push me. And men are different, like, from the era that my father was raised in. Men weren't as affectionate and tell you they love you and things like that, but I knew my dad loved me very much. But he would push me, like, oh, you're not going to do this, you're not going to do that. And, you know, I know he really wanted me to succeed in life. And so, you know, it helped. It helped me now because, I look back on all the things that, you know, both my parents encouraged me to do. So, you know, I wasn't one of those hard-headed kids. You know, I was bad. Don't get me wrong. I was very bad, but I listened to my parents. So I wasn't a bad kid, but I was a little mischievous growing up.
Now, how many sisters and brothers did you have growing up?
Altogether, I have 9 sisters and brothers.
Okay. And you, where are you at in the family?
I am the oldest of my mother's children.
Okay.
So I have 2 younger brothers.
And how did you get to become a social worker? And why? How and why?
Well, when I started out, like, growing up, I always wanted to help people and encourage them to, like, you know, better themselves and things of that nature. So originally, you know, I went to school to become a social worker, and I actually did, like, my practicums for the Mom-O-Bille, if anybody's familiar with that in Philadelphia, and also I worked at the Simpson House because my minor was gerontology. And I also did an internship at Horizon House down 30th Street. If anybody in Philadelphia, you guys probably know those 3 different organizations. You know, and halfway through, I was still working at my job. I've been at my job for 22 years. So
MSW?
As I was going to, I'm sorry?
Are you an MSW?
No.
That is the Master Social Work.
Right, no.
What you
this is what happened. Halfway in, about the time I graduated from college, I was already working at my job. I worked for a bank in Philadelphia, one of the largest banks in the country. And as I was working there, about the time I finished college, I was already making $10,000 more than what they were willing to start me out with as being a case manager. So I was like, okay, so I had to make the choice. Do I stop working, which I was already at my job probably about 5 or 6 years in, and do I go and take a job that was, you know, a pay cut? And at that time, about time I graduated from college, I already had a house, a husband, and 2 kids. So I was like, I can't do the pay cut, so I just stayed at my job. But I couldn't elevate in my job because I didn't have a degree in business is what they were looking for. So what I had to do was I'm glad that my job had, you know, reimbursement, tuition reimbursement, and I went back to school, my job, and got my degree.
Why did you think that you have a bachelor's in business and a master's, I mean, you have several bachelors. You said business and what else?
Business and social work, mental health, social services.
You have 2 bachelors. Okay. Do you see yourself being a business person or do you see yourself continuing in the field of social work?
I consider myself more of a business person now at this point in my life. Since I'm trying to start my own business, a lot of the things I learned in school pertaining to like business management and, you know, a lot of different law, tax laws and things like that are coming into play now since I'm looking into expanding my home business to, you know, be a small business. So a lot of that stuff is coming into play, and it's keeping me grounded as far as, you know, keeping an eye out on different things that I need to pay attention to and, you know, certain certifications and laws and permits and things of that nature that I would need in order to make my business successful. So, yeah, I think I'm more, I still care about people, you know, a great deal, and but I just see more of the business aspect of it at this point in time in my life, yeah.
Now, do you have children or are you married? And tell
yes,
us about
I have 3 children. I'm recently divorced, unfortunately, but I have 3 children. My oldest daughter will be 21 the 10th of this month.
Okay.
My middle daughter is 18. And my youngest daughter will be 15 in August.
Okay. Now, I'm going to get into something that's somewhat I first read to you on Facebook, and we became Facebook friends. I like you. You're a very courageous sister. Religion means alive, is committed to the proposition that people should be free to express their opinions. People also should be free to contradict their opinions. It's a free for. We're not traditional religious. You know, if you come to a masjid and I'm teaching Islamic studies, then I'm teaching Islamic studies. But, excuse me, I'm broadcasting from home and
okay.
Someone is calling me. Let me hang up on them. All right, so one thing about internet broadcasting, you broadcast from somewhere. We all. But I read where you were saying that you're basically just through with black men and that you recommended that our sister just marry immigrant Muslims or somebody else, certainly not messing with African-American men, to use the term. Is that a fair assessment of your statement?
Well, let me correct you on that. I said American black men or African-American men, not black men completely, just African-American men.
Tell us why you say that. And I want you to feel free to be very honest, very upfront, and you can join the conversation. Just a minute, just 1 second. Let's let the audience know that they're free. You can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. Press 1. You're here. You can be on the phone. Just don't be afraid. The sister is a hummus queen. She's a social worker. She is a sister that has her own opinion, which she's entitled to. So I want you to feel free to asked the question. So he said, basically, don't marry black American men. And why? Have you had any
They can. I mean, to each his own.
You wouldn't personally recommend.
No, I'm not going to say that. I wouldn't personally recommend it. Again, to each their own. Everyone's entitled to, you know, be with who they want to be with and, you know, love who they want to love. That's you know, their prerogative if they want to do that. Me personally,
Aisha Muhammad, if Fadira Aisha Muhammad and a brother comes out of 18th and Diamond and he says, I want your hand, his name is Raheem El Hajj Malik Muhammad, you would be somewhat reluctant, if not reluctant, to marry this brother.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. What I would say is I would have to look at his credentials.
Okay.
You know, if this brother was educated, if he was educated, and, you know, if he was educated.
Well, came out of Grapefruit State Prison, but he's a Hafiz of Quran, he's a Mujahidin, you would perhaps be reluctant to grant your hand to him.
Depending on the situation at hand. I can't say that because I have family members who have been incarcerated or currently are incarcerated, and they're good people. So, again, I would have to evaluate the situation.
Statement about anybody, but was that a state of mind? And when I saw your posting on Facebook, well, you said basically you were just saying, brothers pass me by. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's how you
I'll tell you why I said that. The brothers who are on my level, they are not looking at me. They are looking at someone who is of another ethnicity, Guinea sister, you know, as they would claim, BB. But I'm educated. And brothers that are on my level don't want that. It's a known fact. They don't look at me. They bypass me. And just from my upbringing and from the environment that I have been around and been in, more foreign men tend to draw closer to me than African-American men. And that's always been my experience from my teenage years. It's always been that way. African-American men do not look at me. I don't know whether they're intimidated by me that, you know, I have this job and, oh, I got this side business and I'm educated. I don't know. I think they feel threatened by me. So they go get, you know, women who don't either have those credentials or they are of another ethnicity. It happens all the time. So that's my reasoning behind the statement of that's why I don't choose African-American men, because they're not attracted to me.
Okay, I got you. Well, have you found other men to be attracted from other ethnic groups? Have you ever been married to other men from other ethnic groups?
Absolutely, absolutely. Mainly the Caribbean islands, but also many foreigners from other countries. I have Egypt, Tunisia, Andalusia, Greek, African, North African, West African, East African, and mainly the Caribbean islands. So,
all right.
You know,
so you got a global, if you were to go to Hajj, you would definitely find a husband if you were looking at that when you were second.
Mashallah.
Especially if you came there with your hummus.
Oh, yes.
We would have to have,
yes,
it sounds to me like we would have to have security guards for you if you came with your hummus and your present.
Probably
is that right?
So. Probably so. I mean, I just,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, African American men were never attracted to me.
You've never been dated or married before you were Muslim, but you're Muslim. You never were married to any African-American man?
My recent marriage, which I'm divorced from, yes, was African-American.
And that was a tragic experience, but he was attracted to you, right, and he decided to marry you?
at this time, since we're fasting, I'd rather not answer those questions.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair enough. I mean, because you know what you're going to do if you answer any question, in my mind is going to go right back to the hummus anyway. Because I'm quoting at hummus. I'm thinking about red pepper hummus. And so you shouldn't tell me about no Philly steak hummus. And then you actually tell me about black-eyed peas and lobster hummus. And I just got hummus on my brain. And then I can see those little Ritz crackers, or I could have some Doritos or bean chips. I'm just going off on this hummus. Tell us how one can get this hummus, and you all can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. We're speaking with Qadira Aisha Muhammad, the hummus queen, and she's also the advice queen. What is it that you think? Pardon me. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, I'm in pretty good spirits except I'm thinking about hummus. So it makes it kind of difficult for me. After Ramadan, I can do a more extensive interview. But no, because I actually sounds very good. And I happen to like hummus. I'm one of these unusual African-Americans that like hummus. My children, when I buy hummus, I said, this is bought for me, and I can eat up a whole container. In fact, I think I could live on hummus. I happen to like gazondo. What is it, gazondo beans or chickpeas? I love it. There are other kinds of breads you can make, too. Let's talk a little bit also about healthy eating. Can you talk with us about that and why hummus is very good for us?
Well, some of the known, and I wouldn't say they're certified, but known factors behind the garbanzo bean is it helps in weight management. It's also, you know, good for you for your digestive system. It's not a bean that's, you know, hard on your bowels and so forth. And also garbanzo bean or chickpea has been known to have some anti-cancer properties to it. So that's just a couple off the top of my head that I know would benefit, you know, a lot of people. And it's a bean. Beans are good for you because they're high in protein also.
Yeah. How did you come into Al-Islam? You said you had come from a Christian background.
My family, my mother's side of the family, a lot of members, well, her two sisters and her brother are Muslim. So being around my family a lot and interacting with them, it just piqued my curiosity about it. You know, I wasn't forced into it. A lot of people think, oh, you were forced into it or you were, you know, coaxed into, you know, accepting it. As when I was a Christian, I never believed in the Trinity. I never believed that Jesus died on the cross for our sins. And actually, I used to question it, and I used to get in a lot of trouble from my aunts who were, you know, evangelicals and, you know, very, you know, high up in the church and so forth. I would get in trouble all the time because I would question those things. And,
did you grow up in a Pentecostal church?
I actually grew up in an AME church.
Okay.
Methodist.
I know the African Methodist. It has been sprung into the news quite strikingly in that Emmanuel Church, Emmanuel AME Church, and of course Philadelphia, is the city where the AME Church was founded. That is the church of Richard A. Allen, the founder of the African Methodist Episcopal Church. And it was made again more famous by the killing that this devil, Dylan Roof, executed 9 members of the AME Church at Emmanuel Church. So AME Church. So you have a rich history. Now, did your family, what community did your family come from? There are various communities that Muslim African Americans are in, and I would like you to share that with us if you know.
My family, the majority of my family is from South Philadelphia. So that's, you know, that's my general home where I tell everybody, you know, grew up in South Philadelphia. lived in various parts of South Philadelphia, also grew up in West Philadelphia, but now I reside out in Delaware County. So
okay.
I'm very familiar with Philadelphia.
What I was asking was, what communities did the family members of yours come into? Muslim communities. I mean, some people come from the Dar es Salaam movement. Some have come out of the Nation of Islam or the Muslim community of Imam W.D. Muhammad. There are different communities. So I was asking more about your history of how you came to be influenced.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't consider, labeling one of those different types of communities, but the masjid that I attended, from the time that I took my shahada, and I still frequent, that same masjid, it's Philadelphia Masjid, or formerly known as Sister Claire Muhammad.
Okay. All right. That's a good thing. I was just there to give a lecture on Minister Malcolm's birthday. I believe it was the 17th. It was the 19th, but I was there on the 17th of May. So it's a landmark in my thinking. So it's a very fascinating. That's the same community I came out. Let's go back now to, let's talk a little bit, if you will. It's Ramadan, but it's the time. The first 10 days of Ramadan, we have a large non-Muslim population, so we here to educate. First 10 days of Ramadan, we focus really on mercy. We should seek mercy from God. We should also be merciful to each other and to the creation in general. The Creator was merciful to us to open the doors of Ramadan, the month which the revelation was sent down, most importantly, the month of restraint. But the second part of it is forgiveness. And we should be seeking forgiveness. So I know African-American men, we have been up to par. What are some of the things that African-American men can seek forgiveness for as how they treat sisters? One of the things is they categorize sisters that they don't like, sisters who have a certain build.
Right.
You think we should apologize, ask God to forgive us for that? But just
absolutely.
Share with us, what do you think some concerns as an African-American woman, a Muslim African-American woman, have about the state of African-American masculinity vis-a-vis the Muslim African-American community? Or are they any different than other Negroes?
Well, I mean, generally, like with TV and other forms of media, people get brainwashed by what they see. We all know that the average woman is not perfect shape. She's not a Halle Berry. She's not a Beyonce. And, they don't know these people behind closed doors. Once the clothes come off, the costume comes off, the makeup comes off, what these people look like, every day. And even when these people, when these superstars and these singers and actresses and so forth, when they go out in public, they have people professionally sitting there waiting to do their makeup and do their wardrobe. As, an African-American myself, we don't have that luxury. And I'm not making an excuse for it that we shouldn't, look presentable when we go out. But, the ideal shape is not a 5'6 or 3'4. I mean, the ideal, African-American woman is a size 14 up. And, a lot of people are turned off from that, and basically African-American men, especially once they get higher up the chain as far as economical status, as far as, if they're a basketball player, if they're an athlete, or if they're a lawyer or a doctor, they tend not to look at the sisters who are right on their level. They look at someone that's basically of another race, or someone who fits that stereotypical model of a build. And, like a lot of sisters like myself are left out in the dark with basically no one to turn to. I mean, it's not that I don't think these sisters, because I know a lot of, people who do, you know, marry outside of their race and outside of their culture for the simple reason that, you know, I guess African American men just don't find us appealing.
Okay, so you're saying that African American men have a tendency to reject. Well, what would you say about the sisters who some African American men tend to favor? Is African American, what is it called? Big
BBW.
Beautiful Women? BBWs? A BBS is Big Beautiful Sisters. There's some brothers follow the West African aesthetic. They like them. The bigger, the better.
Right.
How do you respond to that?
And that is true. Like, you know, African men tend to like women who are of a bigger build and not slim or, you know, like, you know, a model size. That's what I was relating back to in my earlier statement, that those foreign men, whether they're from the Caribbean islands, from Africa or beyond, they tend to, especially like Egyptians, Tunisians, Andalusians, the North Africans, Egyptians, they love African-American women. They love us. I don't know why, but they just have some fetish about us that they love. And
what do you
they're
think
not
it is
ashamed
that they love about African-American women? The people from Andalusia, the people from Maghreb, the people from West Africa, I mean, they love you. What do you think they love about African-American sisters? And what is it that the African-American brothers seem to be missing? Because I don't know about in my department, I've dated, married, exclusive African-American women. I mean, that's me. If one sister dropped me, I'm going to get another one. So I don't know. Y'all sisters listening?
I don't know. I guess I would say, like, with me, it's my confidence. Like, you know I'm not a model. You know, I don't consider myself one of the most beautiful people in the world. I just consider myself average. But with that, I have a lot of confidence in myself and also what I believe. And I think that is what radiates from me. And those men don't feel intimidated at all. Like, I think they like the attitude, as they say, that the black women, black American women have. They like that attitude. And African American men seem to be turned off by it. As they would say, the head roll and the neck.
Speaking about the sassiness, some people call it sassy. I have heard other men say, I like them because she's sassy. You one of them sassy black women? So are you one of those sassy sisters? What do you define what it means to be a sassy sister?
I would just say being confident. You know, like, again, like I said, I'm not a model. I don't portray to be, you know, this big person that everybody needs to see and watch and things of that nature. I just think that my confidence, and when I believe in something, it radiates from me. So anything that I put my passion into and my heart into, people are going to see that and notice that. And, you know, just having a positive attitude about things, like, and I'm very upfront and blunt, like, about things I don't like. Like, I won't lead you on to think that it's something and it's not, whether, you know, we're handling business or, you know, a day-to-day relationship. You know, I'm always upfront and frank about how I feel about things. And, you know, like, a lot of times people don't like it because, as I tell people, this is not the donut shop. I don't sugarcoat nothing. I tell it like it is. And, you know, some people like me for it. Some people hate me for it, so... That's what I consider me as being sassy, because I don't bite my tongue. My dad used to tell me that all the time.
We have a text message from somebody who texted us to ask her about what her views are on Islam in the United States regarding his view from the American perspective. I don't know whether I get the question or not, but Go
oh,
for
I
the
get
question.
It.
You get it, right? Well, you're
yeah,
a job.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay.
From my travels, you know, I've traveled around the world. I've been to a lot of different countries and so forth. And what I see, and this, again, is my personal opinion, people who come from an Islamic country like Saudi or Morocco, wherever have you, they come to America and it's like they want to let their hair down. You know, they don't, they come from that strict, you know, religious environment. So when they come to the United States, it's like they're letting their hair down and they're not so religious as they should be. Here in America, my experience has been that the African American is trying to grasp what they left. As far as we want this religion, we want to hold on tight to it, we want to practice it, we want it to be known that we're Muslim and we're proud. Where, you know, as a lot of foreigners, you know, they try to obscure their identity as being Muslim. You know, I go to a lot of different masjids, and, you know, the masjid that I attend sometimes is very culturally diverse. You know, the women put their hijab on when they're walking through the door of the masjid, and as soon as they leave out, they take it off. You know, like me being African-American, even though, you know, I work in corporate America, I've always worn hijab and never looked at it, okay, I'm going to take it off, you know, because I'm at work or whatever. And I just look at it as either you accept it or you don't. And it's the cutter of a law. Whatever happens is going to happen unless you make dua. So that's how I look at that question. I hope I answered it correctly or at least touched on it.
I have a post I want to keep the brother anonymous. But he wrote to me on Facebook. He said, I would never marry an East African woman. She was checking out West African men in front of me and claimed that she was in no need at all to lower her gaze. And on top of that, she said, that was then and this is now. Don't marry a Muslim from a different nation if you're attracted to a certain kind of people, my motto. And then he says, no, thanks. After what my ex-African wife did to me, a real black man lives in Mecca, Medina. The rest are wannabe blacks who look like African. But now lived also in Mecca, so follow him. Live black Muslim, and I might call you. Only then I'll respect you. My ex-black wife made me question both my African-Americanness and Western African, what she did to me. Conclusion, you're not black until you live in the land of Tawheed. And your daughter will marry us while they hide their horny love for Yao people. What my black wife did to me was not forgivable. You don't deserve to call until you put your own horny people against the wall and move to Mecca. This is a brother, and you all can join the conversation. It's pretty provocative. I'm going to tell you something. You all will need some hummus after this one, and you're probably going to need some Philly steak hummus after this. It's getting hot up in here. People getting hungry. What do you say to that brother? He's a Facebook friend of mine. He's blind to me on Facebook. We're going to keep him anonymous.
Okay.
Because he might be one of your best customers, so we keep him anonymous. Tell us what we can get this hummus if we're in Philadelphia. Those of you in Philadelphia, I'm going to give you a commercial. But before I give you a commercial, I'm going to tell you what you can do as an audience. You can send your donations to Imam Alfred at PayPal, Imam Alfred at PayPal, or you can send your donations to Imam Alfred, Alfred Muhammad's Prostate Cancer Fund on GoFundMe. We'll get the money. If you'd like to send it to us right away, you can send this to Imam Alfred Muhammad, 817 Jackson Avenue, Linden, New Jersey, 07036. I want to say to you, I'm going to be in Chicago and Hazelcrest, Illinois, outside of Chicago, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for the Ramadan session. And we will be discussing from the Quran and from the life example of the prophet, son of the prophet, how researching our faith for implementation of leadership. That's going to be the 10th, 11th, and 12th in Chicago at the Mosque Cares building. I think it's 179th East. Well, my son will give me that. So, sister, what do you have to say about that, what I just said?
That was a lot. That was okay, let me just, I want to try to understand that. So he's African-American, and his wife was West African?
Yes, he said, I would never marry an East African woman. And he goes on, he said, she was checking out West African men in front of me and claimed she was in no need at all to lower her gaze. And on top of that, she said, that was then and this is now. I've heard reports like that, too. And what she was saying is she didn't even consider him to actually be a Muslim. And I've also heard that, too. Some of them consider us just wannabes, that you can't be a Muslim unless you came from the land of Muslims. What do you say to that, dear sister?
And I've heard that, and, you know, how I address that is, you know, I always go back to Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and his companions, the Sahabas. None of them were born Muslim. They all accepted Islam and took their Shahada and, you know, were close companions with Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So, you know, how dare you look down on somebody who isn't born Muslim? And being born Muslim is not granting you Jannah. You know, you have to do the same things as I have to do. You know, I guess that's a privilege that they feel, but that's also, you know, some Arab countries, you know, have a disdain with, you know, African Americans and, you know, Africans, period, anybody of dark color. And, again, I revert back to, you know, the companions of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. You know, Bilal, he was African. And he was dark. And, you know, there's a verse in the Quran that says, you know, no Arab is better than the black and no black is better than the Arab. Like, we're supposed to look past, you know, this color thing. But just because you're born in Islam does not make you better than someone who reverted to Islam.
I agree with you. I don't know why people think that, but that's the case. Let's talk about, what do you see some of the problems in the role of women in that Islam?
I grew up in urban, what they would consider urban America. As they would say, the ghetto, the hood, and so forth. You know, it's just like, it seems like there's been a breakdown in the family structure. And again, a lot of the African-American males caught up so much in this glamorization of, you know, what these rappers have, what these athletes have, and, you know, they just get so caught up in the materialistic things. And I think it goes back to, you know, back to slavery times. And, you know, if people ever heard of the Willie Lynch syndrome, you know, I still think that's very active today. Like, it still has a hold on the African-American community. It's a stronghold on them. It's like a noose around their neck. So, you know, until African-American men are willing to humble themselves and not sell drugs because they want those new Jordans and listen to their mom and their dad telling them to go to school to at least get their high school diploma, you know, and better themselves and not fall into the foolishness of, you know, illegal activities and not have a criminal record and just go to work. I mean, you know, I know people say that a minimum wage job isn't, you know, where it's at and I could, you know, sell these drugs or I could do this illegal thing and get this money real quick or whatever like that. But everything that comes easy has a price with it. If you work hard, if you dedicate yourself, And if you listen, I'm sure, you know, by the cut of a law, you'll be, you know, successful. You know, people just get so caught up into materialistic things that, you know, we get sidetracked. And, you know, like a quote my father always used to say, if you can't pay for it in cash, you don't need it.
Sound like a wise man. Where was he from?
He was from Haiti.
Okay. And mom, where was she from?
American.
So you have so I can see why you would have a preference to men from the Caribbean, because your father's from the Caribbean. That's normal.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing all of you in Chicago. Those who can travel, travel with me. 929 West 171st Street, East Hazelcrest, Illinois. If you were in the Midwest, you're no more than 5 hours away from us in Detroit. Those who are in Michigan, those in Indiana, those in Ohio. I will be in Chicago. I mean, in the mosque here is building the headquarters of the Ministry of Imam Warthani Muhammad, the man who's given the distinction of having the largest conversion in recent history, and also for educating Muslims and what is called Usulul Deen here in America. I was one of his students. So I'd like for you all to come out. I'll be there. I'm presenting. I won't tell you what day to present. I want you to come just for me. But I will be one of the presenters. And I'm definitely going to be applying it to time and circumstances and what we call fiqh. Fiqh, spelled fast, kaf, kaf. Ha. It means the use of the imagination, or spelled F-A-Q-I-H in the Latin letters. We have a few minutes. Any callers here? We've got about 8 minutes. You can call at 805-727-7013, 805-727-7013. And press 1 on your phone if you already own. And we definitely going to have another conversation after Ramadan. And we're speaking with the Hummus Queen and a sister who is a social worker and a business lady. And she basically is saying what she had seen of the brothers, not something she wanted to put up with, and she's not going down that route anymore. She sees West Africans, the East Africans, the Andalusians, the Maghrebis, the Caribbean, the people from Haiti, more interested in her. Therefore, she is most interested in her. And if I understand sister correctly, she's not going down this route with these African-American men no more.
Nope.
You should write a book on that. Written by the Hummus Queen. I tell you, you probably sold a million copies, because millions of other sisters probably would agree with you. We're talking about what does the African-American man have to do to earn the right to even get in the line to even ask, think of asking you to be his wife?
I would say, first and foremost, I want you to be educated. I want you to have some kind of zeal in life, you know, some kind of goal. You know, like, I don't want somebody that's stagnant, like, okay, I'm working this minimum wage job and, you know, I'm content with it. Is there something else in life that drives you? Like, did you ever want to, you know, start your own business, you know, do things of that nature? I need somebody that's driven. Somebody that's going to work with me and not against me, you know, because we can both build each other up to be stronger and, you know, in the bond of marriage if that was, you know, to happen. I'm looking for somebody who has a job, a full-time job, not, you know, oh, I was working this day and, you know, couple of weeks later, oh, I'm not working no more and things of that nature. You know, I want someone with consistency. You know, I'm just going by stuff that I've seen my father and my parents do. My father worked two jobs almost all his life, you know, and I always seen him, you know, take care of family first and, you know, provide for his family. So that's, you know, that's the same thing that I'm looking for, even though I'm not looking for so much the provisions because I can take care of myself. But I want somebody to be on a level as far as, you know, have respect for you, understand what it means to be a husband, understand what it means to be a friend also, because you can't have a marriage without being a friend to your spouse as well.
Join the conversation at 805-727-7013. We are on Religion Means Live with Imam Alfred. If you're on the line, just press 1 on the phone and you will be answered. Let's see how many more minutes. We have about 5 more minutes.
Okay.
What recommendations will you give to your daughters concerning African-American men? Marrying of them, that is.
Well, yeah, because first they got to get past me before they get past my brother, who's dear Wally. So, I mean, I want my daughters to marry someone that is educated, first and foremost, because they're educated. You know, I have two daughters in college now. I want someone who respects that if they want to continue their education before starting a family, that they can respect that. I want my children to marry someone, and they can be African-American, but I want them to come from a strong background, preferably, you know, a two-parent home or, you know, something of that nature if you had a stepfather that helped raise you, so forth. I think it's really important that African-American men have a father in the home first and foremost. Women can, you know, teach you how to be, you know, a good parent. They can teach you how to be a good person, but they can't teach you how to be a father. That needs to come from your father. I think that's the most important thing that, you know, is lacking in the African-American community, is that there's no fathers that are participating in their children's lives. And girls or boys, that can lead to a lot of different issues when they're ready to start their own families because they don't know how to be men. You get the demasculization of men where these boys are growing up all around women, and they don't know how to, you know, interact with women on that level. It's just a lot of different issues that go on, but first and foremost, to be educated. And if they can reach a higher level of education than high school, a high school diploma, then that's way more than a plus. Also, somebody that has drive and zeal. Like, you know, you just don't want to marry her because, you know, you want to have sex with her or whatever like that, but because you respect her and you understand, like, you know, the real sanctity of marriage. So if my daughters choose someone or, you know, wants to pursue someone who is African-American, those would be some of my top items that, you know, I would request that they have.
Well, we are about a half hour away from fast breaking. We're speaking with the Hummus Queen, Sister Qadira Aisha Muhammad. We have really enjoyed this conversation again. When I can eat, we want to know how we can ship. How can one get in touch with Sister Qadira? If you're African-American man, come with all your qualifications. But if you want to buy the hummus, including black eyed peas hummus, lobster hummus, Philly steak hummus, crab cake hummus, hummus. You got about one more minute, Sister Hummus Queen.
Okay, I'll run it down to you real quick. If you want to make an order, you can contact me, 610-836-2120. You can go to my website, which is Hardy Hummus, one word, .wix, that's WIX.com, / Hardy Hummus, one word, or you can use # Hardy Hummus on any social network.
Well, we have had the Hummus Queen with us today from the great city of Philadelphia. And until tomorrow, we're going to be off the air a little earlier today. We're usually on to 8:30. Sister, will you agree to come back again and be further interviewed, part two?
Inshallah. I'm up for it. I had a nice time. I appreciate you inviting me to join this call today.
I thank you. You've had Sister Hummus Queen. So we can become rich and a billionaire. Send a check to us at gmail.com, or you can also send it to us via PayPal, and we will accept donations from the Hummus Queen until the Hummus King comes along. They have the Hummus Queen. How's that? Thank you so much. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You've listened once again to another edition of Religion Means a Lie.